Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. If you've been watching what's been happening in Syria, well, you'll know that for the past, say, 11 days, the rebel alliances have been charging all across Syria and eventually, you know, making sure that there is the fall of the Bashar al-Assad's regime. Finally, that family has now ceased to rule over Syria. On the line with us is Dr. Kingsley Makubela, a former diplomat and director at Risk Recon. Thank you so much, Dr. Makubela, for your time.
Thank you very much, Pamela. What a pleasure to talk to you.
So when we all started looking at what happens in the Middle East at the conflict that started, not the entire genesis, because that's always going to be a bone of contention, but yeah, when we look at August 7th, and there were many debates about how what happened there was going to affect the region. And for some time, you had people who were not on the same page, others saying, no, you know, it will remain around Palestine and Israel. I always thought it's bound to spill over. Would you connect the spillage to what happened on October 7th?
Absolutely, Pamela. You know, the events between the Palestinian and the Israelis were definitely going to affect the whole area. But however, the fall of the government in Damascus was basically unexpected. It took only 11 days for the rebel group to seize Damascus. And no one expected that Bashar al-Assad would fall within such a short space of time. Mm. But it brings in a very serious concerns and insecurity in the area. Remember, Pimelo, the group that is called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which essentially means the Assembly for the Liberation of Syria, is a dominant group. There are other groups that are there, the Syrian interim government, the White Helmet. So there are different factions that are involved. But the message that is carried out by the leader of the dominant group, Mohammed al-Jolani, seems to send a message that this is going to be very encompassing government. But the absence of government raises serious risks. We've seen this happening in Libya. We've seen this happening in Somalia. That any opportunities can emerge during this uncertainty and claim that he's the sole leader of a group, and that would create a spiral of conflict in the area.
Mm. I beg your pardon. I think I said August. I meant October 7th. You so elegantly corrected me. I thought, you know, yes, there will be some sort of as I said earlier, you know, a spillage into what is happening in Syria. But as you said, 11 days was very, very quick. What do you think happened there? How was it possible that with the support, for instance, of Russia, do you think they didn't see it coming? Do you think something broke in his hold on Syria? I know there's always been, and we've been reporting on this for a long time, of course, dissatisfaction within the country just by ordinary citizens. But just your analysis of how he lost grip on a very tight, what seemed to be a very tight grip on a nation, and I suppose also quite quite firm grip on a nation.
You know, Pimelo, in the last 18 years, the government has lost control of strategic areas in Idlib. The Americans were literally looting oil across Syria, and a large quantity of oil was transferred through Turkey and sold to the open market. So the government has lost some resources. And there are scholars, actually, who are of the view that the government actually could not pay the military anymore. Ah. That's why once the conflict erupted, the government, the military just gave up and they handed over their weapons. Some of them are said to have moved back into Iraq and handed over their heavy weaponry into Iraq. They never fought. The Russians could not fight their fight. The Russians were always providing strategic air defense and air support and air power for the government. But in the absence of any government troops, it was quite definite that this is going to fall. And what we are seeing, images that we are seeing playing themselves now, Pimelo, it shows that the government was basically unpopular, because if you see the popular support that is coming out to support this, it means there's been a really quiet and really building up resentment towards the government. Once the opportunity arose, people started to openly state in their views.
You know, you speak of how the populace is responding to this. And of course, you've got this really strange tension between excitement that he's gone. But I think there's also some sort of, you know, nervousness about the vacuum that this whole thing has created in leadership.
Emmanuel, not only the vacuum, if you look at the dominant group that is there now, that assists power. It's a dominant group that comes from the Sunni sect of the Islamic faith. And if you look at the Alawid sect that really the president belonged to, is a bigger minority group, which consists of about 10% of the population. Then it tells you about the Shia, which is the smallest group in the country, the Ismailis that are smallest group. And the fear is that these things are going to play themselves out now that there's a vacuum. And that's what everyone is fearing for. And the hope is that Turkey would play a very prominent role in terms of stabilizing the situation and getting some government in place. You would know that the former prime minister decided to stay on to say he wants to hand over peaceful power. There's no peaceful handover of power.
Yep.
Power has been seized by military. He has no power. He has no authority to hand over anything. The power has been forcefully taken from them. So the question is, how is this going to play itself? And that's where the fear is. The whole Levant area may be engulfed in a serious conflict. We may see what is going on in Libya playing itself now there, and it's much more complicated in that area. Given the fact that Pimelo, Mohamed Jolani, was actually a very good friend of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who was killed by the Americans, who is the founder of the ISIS. He was part of the ISIS. And al-Baghdadi was part of the formation of the organization that currently Mohammed al-Jawali is leading. So it's going to create a problem. There's a resentment towards the current leader, the de facto military leader. And remember, there's a bounty of $10 million on his head by the U.S. The question is, what's going to happen to the Abu Mohammed al-Jolani in the interim? And it seems that toning down from the Western media, it appears that they may remove the bounty on him, but it would have certain conditions. It's not going to be a free thing. So the view now that we are having, that it's likely that a lot of intelligence agencies from the West are playing behind the scene role to try to understand and nudge the current situation in their favor. There are rumors also that Jelani worked for Mossad, and no one knows if that's true. So there are all this uncertainty, and the Americans have been bombing certain parts of Syria, saying they're bombing ISIS. The Israelis have bombed a major research center in Damascus. So they are complicating this thing. They may harden some elements now within Syria. So there's a lot of uncertainty that is emerging, but the risk is quite huge for this to spiral out into serious civil war, and we hope that's not going to happen. The hope is that there will be some form of rapprochement amongst these groups to find some solution in terms of charting the way forward.
Well, I mean, isn't this exactly what Israel likes, right? An unstable region, in a sense, where they actually have come out quite victorious, in my view.
No, not quite. Because if you look at the Sunni groups, and if you look at the leader of the HTS, he comes from a very hardline issue of the Sunni that is associated with Wahhabi group, that is advocating for Ummah, which is the brotherhood and the solidarity amongst Muslims. He has already made a pronouncement that The victory is for Islamic State of Syria. So are they going to try to advocate what the ISIS and Al-Qaeda have been advocating for? It remains to be seen. But this is fraught with serious uncertainty, and I think it's compounded by the relentless bombing by the U.S. and the Israelis are really complicating the situation on the ground.
And maybe that's what I'm saying. I'm saying with the relentless bombing and their interest in Syria, they may take advantage of the situation, and who knows what they will achieve there.
Exactly, precisely, because if you look at the text and what President of Turkey has been saying, and the position that he has towards Israel and his support for the Palestinian is antithesis of what the Americans would like to see. This is going to complicate. The situation is too complicated for now. And of course, and that's why I'm saying I hope behind the scene there's some level of reaching out to try to speak to all the groups, including the American groups, that has been really protecting American looting of oil in Idlib and so on, the white helmet, to reach out to every faction to see to either they are all included in this. So far, the message by Al-Jawani seems to be that of reconciliation. Is he saying this message because he realizes the amount of pressure that is there? Is there any blueprint for a future in Syria? No, this way people were united by their resentment towards the Assad family in the Assad dynasty. Mm. But now that the dynasty is gone, you may see some of the differences surfacing among themselves. And given the fact that they are all armed, the propensity to resort to military domination or taking over, it's there.
And who then would be that credible individual or state that would broker this peace?
Turkey is in a better position because Turkey is concerned about the Kurds that are really operating in northern Syria, that have some form of relationship with the KPP in Turkey. And the Americans have been really giving them some support. And that was has caused friction between Turkey and the United States. So Turkey has better influence. Turkey has better influence even in terms of Al-Jawani. Turkey can play a significant role. You may have seen statements between the Turks and the Russians that they are starting to talk to each other to try to pacify that situation, if one may want to use that term. But if the Russians, because they have an interest also to retain their air base and their naval base there, and they want to negotiate that with the future government. So they have some leverage in terms of really trying to nudge the situation for the better. But we're not sure about the hardliners that may emerge within that situation. Remember, people are still having this dream of the caliphate, creating the caliphate around the entire Levant. Are this element really prominent within the dominant opposition force that is led by Al-Jawani? No one knows.
Well, I mean, if whoever entertains the West, there's no way that they're going to allow the Russians to remain with some of their bases there. It's not going to happen.
Well, the Russians will provide some security guarantees. Remember, the Russians have really bombed a lot of these people. Mm. And the word of reconciliation that comes from the new dominant force may give some assurances to the Russians. But I don't think they're going to want to see what they call infidels in an Islamic state. Mm. It's going to create a huge problem. But the Russians, remember, they have a huge component of Muslims that are coming from within their country. And they may use some of these people to try to nudge some level of reconciliation. There are no permanent enemies in politics. And I think you're going to see this thing playing itself out either ways. What I hope won't happen is that there won't be any tug of war between the West and the Russians in terms of pulling these groups and trying to play their own influence. And particularly with Erdogan, the president of Turkey, being really having some problems with the Americans and having problems with the Russians. With the Russians feel that Erdogan actually played them. There are certain assurances that he gave them, and he reneged on those assurances. It's not the first time. They don't have any trust in terms of the Ukraine because there are certain issues that he promised, and he reneged on issues and went on to provide weapons to Ukraine. So that's the resentment towards Erdogan from the Russians. So we will see how this thing plays out. No one knows. And you know, Pimelo, this is the first time that this kind of a takeover happened without a support by the West. Because they've always had resentment toward the group, not even a support by the Russians or the Chinese for that matter. So this is an independent group, and this independent group takes problems. But what won't happen is the alliance between this group and the Shiite group in Iraq, because that has been a fear. You recall that just a few days after the assault on Hama, Muqtada al-Sadr sent a message when people are trying to mobilize forces in Iraq to go over and defend Syria. And he says, no, they're not going to go there. Because he understood it's from a sectarian perspective. He's a Shiite, and the dominant force there are Sunnis, and he has had problems with the Sunnis in Iraq, so there's no way he's going to support them. So are these sectarian divisions going to play themselves out there? It's one thing that risk analysts are really concerned about, and they are serious risks that this may really disintegrate further.
Well, I mean, having said what I said, I tend to agree with you what you're saying, because also we must consider the fact that the U.S. now will be led by Trump, who doesn't quite have too much of a problem with Russia. So, you know, things won't be maybe as bad as they are in terms of those relations.
Donald Trump has made it quite clear. He said he doesn't want to get involved in this conflict there. Yeah. But are the Israelis going to let Trump do that? Because, you know, the United States has always fought wars and battles of the Israelis. And the Israelis have always managed to convince the Americans that getting rid of certain leaders is to their interest. And now you see this coordinated bombing by the Israelis and the Americans on the Syrians. Now that Assad is gone, they keep on bombing facilities for the new government. You can see the intention. It's not to allow this group to have access to those kind of research areas, to have access to strategic military area. I mean, Israel has moved 4 kilometers into the buffer zone in the northern Syria. Are these groups going to allow that? And these are issues that may really create or ignite new conflicts between the group and the Israelis, and further engulfing, complicating the issues. And now that you have some of the hardliners that are there, may create a huge problem in the area. But this is fraught with serious risks in the whole Levant area, and particularly focus on areas of Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon and Israel. So we are really concerned, all of us, and we're crossing our fingers that there will be some level of leadership. And sometimes leadership emerges during crisis. The leadership will stand up and bring everyone together. But if we look at history, what's happened in the past, particularly when you see serious hawks, military approach to try to suppress the group, that may really further engulf the area. The Americans tried this in Somalia, sending arms, they were humiliated. They tried it in Afghanistan, they were humiliated. The Russians were humiliated in Afghanistan. So this is an area that actually everyone is quite concerned about, and given the fact that they have resources. But the only conduit for the oil and selling the oil has been through Syria, through Turkey. And Turkey holds the key in terms of the resources of this group, and the resources of the future government. Turkey can stifle them, can make it impossible for them to have access to any capital. Now, the question is for this group to start getting basic services on the ground. Are they likely to do that without any resources? Do they have people who are capable of running state institutions? Because being in a war and running state institutions are totally different. So this is one thing that all of us are crossing our fingers and waiting to see what would happen. Would they reach out to civil society and bring the competence, reach out to people in the Syrians in the diaspora to bring them back and use their expertise to run a credible government? It's something that we are yet to see.
So to what extent is the corruption charges that Netanyahu is about to face now, well, at least that trial may start soon, to what extent will that affect all the conflicts that now Israel is involved with?
You know, the conventional view, Pimelo, is that once Netanyahu is charged, and that's why Netanyahu doesn't want any peace in this area, because he uses this as his ace bait to play and say, listen, the war must carry on and we are in war, we can't be running this. But apparently there appears the information, corruption charges against Netanyahu are quite credible. The Israelis have compiled enough dossier. And the Israeli justice system, I must say, it must be applauded in terms of dealing with this internal dynamic issue. They're quite thorough. They went to raid the house of the sitting prime minister to get evidence. And the evidence appears to really implicate Netanyahu in serious corruption. So, and now they brought these charges. He's likely to face trial now. Will you have a prime minister who's facing trial, who's standing trial and conducting war at the same time? That's why people like Yoav Gallant raise serious concern about Netanyahu's fitness, and other people are raising a serious concern about Netanyahu's fitness to keep on running the state of Israel.
I really appreciate your time, former diplomat and director at Risk Recon, Dr. Kingsley Makubela. Really comprehensive analysis there about what is happening in Syria. I don't know if you've been watching. If you haven't, just maybe just go to some of the international networks that are available and just see for yourself. Really, really interesting what's going on there.
These are stories. If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.